Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Musician's Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Mark, and it's almost Christmas time, baby. I hope that you're all gearing up or winding down for your festive seasons. It's going to be a good one. Thank you all for the support this year, and I'm really looking forward to 2024. I hope you all are too. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with one of my absolute favorite drummers on the planet, Mr. Adam Nussbaum. Adam is a New York-based drummer slash musician, and in addition to working as a band leader, he's worked with an array of artists, including Michael Brecker, Paul Blay, Gil Evans, John Scofield, Lee Konitz, you name it, he's done it. David Liebman, I mean, this guy's credits just go on and on and on. He's also been involved with a number of drum education books and DVDs, which I've been lucky enough to see over the years. He's just a cool dude, and we talk about music and life and drumming, and I was super inspired by this, so I hope that you are too. If you are, please do me a favor, leave us a rating or review on your preferred streaming platform, and, you know, share this with your musician or up-and-coming musician friends. It helps us grow, and I appreciate it. But for now, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Adam Nussbaum. All right, Adam Nussbaum, so good to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know we spoke for a couple of minutes before I hit record, but this is such a treat for me. I've looked up to you as a drummer for many years. So while this podcast typically doesn't just talk about instrumentation, I am going to ask you a few drum-heavy questions. But we are going to just jump straight into it. And what I like to do, if you've never listened to any of the podcasts in the past, I always ask my guest, as weird as it is, while I know a lot about you, and I know about some of the projects, you know, John Scofield and your Leadbelly project, Stan Getz, all that kind of stuff, I always ask if my guest, in this case you, wouldn't mind giving a brief introduction on who you are and introduce your dog at the same time, because we're massive dog lovers here.
Yeah, that's my dog, Cosmo. You know how dogs are. They're very protective of the home environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's about 18 pounds of terror fluff. He's a beautiful little Bichon, and he's a great dog. What about me? Well, I guess I first fell in love with the drums when I was about five. I didn't really study drums until I was about 12 or 13. The instrument that I studied was classical piano from 7 to 12. And I was just playing drums by watching and listening. Monkey see, monkey do. And the community I grew up in, I had some elders there that I was able to watch, and they were always very encouraging. And I really came to the drums for music. I didn't come to music from the instrument. And I kind of fell in love with jazz, I think, when I was about 14 or 15. Before that, I was listening to all kinds of music, and I was playing in bands with my friends, playing rock and whatever was happening at the time, the Motown thing, the British Invasion, just about anything. And I was fortunate that my parents had a very wide-ranging record collection. So I was hearing all kinds of music in the house, classical music, folk music, blues, jazz, as well as everything that was on the radio at the time. So I'm pretty much somebody who's been affected by everything that I've heard. And that's kind of where I'm at. I consider myself a musical erasist.
Define that for me, if you wouldn't mind.
Erase all the BS.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? Good music is good music. Honest music is honest music. And I just try to enjoy what I can, and whatever I play, I try to play it, not at it.
That's a great way to look at it. So
I'm hoping to keep doing it.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that for a second. How do you think the early sort of foundations of the piano affected your drumming? Like, did that make you more melodic from the start when you were drumming? Or did you kind of, once you got into the drum bug, did you... You know, I know a lot of drummers get so into, well, instrumentalists in general, once they decide that that's going to be their instrument, they kind of live, breathe, eat it, which is necessary to have a career like somebody like you. But did you find that the piano affected your drumming at all?
Well, I think what was important for me was I was hearing music first.
Yeah.
More than I was hearing specific instruments. And I was always aware of how the drums fit in within the music. And I think it was very helpful for me because I was always thinking about melodies and harmony and things like that, not just rhythm. And the beauty of the piano is it's all those things in one instrument.
True.
You have the rhythm because it is basically a percussive instrument, but you're also dealing with melody and within what the piano can bring forth, harmony. And like I said before, I came to the drums for music. I was playing drums and, you know, playing on pillows and everything along with the radio. And I had no idea what rudiments were. I didn't know what any of those things were. I was just listening, watching, and doing what I heard and saw.
So at what point did you start to figure out the more technical aspects of it, like rudiments?
Well, I think when I was about 14, I started to take drum lessons because I wanted to understand a little bit about the language of the instrument. And where I grew up, I used to hear a drum corps play, and that was kind of interesting, even though I wasn't interested in doing it. And that was something. And I just wanted to try to get a little bit more information in regard to what the foundational elements were for the instrument.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to take some lessons and things like that. I mean, it used to frustrate my friends who were drummers and taking drum lessons because, not to be talking myself up here, I was playing much better than they were. And I didn't know anything about rudiments at all. I was just, like I said, complete monkey see, monkey do. I mean, you think about a lot of things that we learn, we don't learn them out of books. How'd you learn how to walk? How'd you learn how to talk? Didn't come out of a book.
Very true.
And I just was like a sponge. I was just absorbing everything. I was fortunate, like I said, I had some elders around my area where I grew up that I was able to, I was able to watch them, and I was able to, I guess they saw my youthful exuberance and enthusiasm, and they were all very encouraging along the way. So
yeah.
I was grateful for that. I think my first initial inspiration was I had a cousin of mine who was 9 years older. And when I was 5, I spent a weekend with him and his parents, and he had the drum set. And he was playing along with some 45s, and I just did what he did, and I could just kind of do it.
That's cool.
So that was an initial inspiration for me.
Yeah, and you probably find with you playing better than your friends, that, again, probably came from the aspect that you were listening to it from a music point of view. You were trying to play music where, you know, if you think of the average drum student going to a drum lesson, a lot of them are just trying to count and play an exercise. They don't often make it musical. It's like a whole different thing trying to make it music, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been my motivation. And as a drummer, my job is to try to help everyone else sound good.
Yeah.
And that's why I've been fortunate enough to be able to work, because my main consideration is them, not me. I mean, we've all heard that old acronym for the word team. Together, everyone achieves more. And I've always tried to get inside the music of whatever it is I have to do. And I think it's very important whenever you are a drummer in a band, you have to know the form, you have to know the composition, you have to know the melody. You know, these things help to keep everything in line.
Yeah.
Because we know if anything goes wrong in the band, the first person they're going to look at is a drummer.
That's just never going to change.
No, it's never going to change.
Yeah, if the gig's too loud, it's the drummer's fault. If the gig's too soft, it's the drummer's fault. If it's too fast, it's the drummer's fault. It's always, hell, the guitar could not work and it's the drummer's fault, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man.
So, you know, just to stay on the drumming heavy side here for a couple more questions, if you don't mind, Adam.
Sure.
Here's a bit of a strange one. With the knowledge and experience that you have at this point in your life, I mean, you've been playing for decades. If a young, eager, wanting to learn drums type individual approached you for some advice on where or how to start correctly nowadays, especially in this world of just so much information, what would your advice to them be?
Well, I think you foundational elements are necessary, and they transcend style. You have to have a sense of a good sound. You have to learn how to get a good sound from your instrument. You better have good time. And you have to be aware of how what you're going to play, how that's going to fit within the context of the subject you're trying to get involved in. I mean, the instrument is one thing, but understanding the subject, the music, is very important. I'm not saying you have to be able to tell me all the chord changes on a tune, but you have to be able to hear that and be able to help that situation be as good as it can be. Hmm. Yeah, you have to understand the subject, not just the instrument. And the unfortunate thing was during the whole pandemic situation, so many people were just home playing by themselves. Now, the drums are not an instrument like piano or guitar or something where you can be a solo instrument and go out and play by yourself. You generally have to accompany other people. And unfortunately, during the pandemic, so many people were just playing by themselves, working on technique, speed, fast, things like that. That's not music. That's almost like, that's another aspect. And, you know, that's something that people can appreciate also. But it's not about making music. It's maybe the athleticism of an instrument. But that, to me, that's not what music is about. Music is about getting a great feel, getting a great vibe, having people feel something.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. At the end of the day, for me, whoever I hear in any genre of music, you're going to, if they got something happening, you're going to feel something. And to me, we could say they got some blues in what they're doing, where it touches your heart, not just your mind.
Yeah.
And you want to find that midpoint, you know, between a lot of music I'm hearing now is from the neck up.
Yeah.
You know, there's still got to be something from the waist down, and there's got to be some heart and soul in there. So you got to meet midway.
Yeah, I mean, these are all very strong but accurate points, you know. I mean, the heart,
yeah.
You know, the it's great that the digital world has made it so easy for anybody to make music. But again, music has changed from going to make music with people in group kind of environments that maybe was a more collaborative effort than what it is with a lot of people now. I mean, you look at a lot
Absolutely.
Of the people on the charts and most of them are just people with a laptop. Now, listen, I'm not downplaying that. That still takes a certain amount of talent. Obviously, you need to have an
Absolutely.
Ear for melody. But I totally get what you're saying. I mean, the heart, there's a reason why when you're watching a lot of these current movies or when you go to certain venues still, they're still playing certain music that was made, you know, wasn't made within the last 10 years, yet it still doesn't sound dated. It's like a lot of the new stuff, it sounds great for a couple of months and you put it on 6 months later and you go, already the samples they've used on a snare drum sound dated. You know, so it's interesting.
Well, it's a sample. Remember that word, sample.
Yeah.
It's not a real thing. Yeah. It's a sample.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's another stage in the development of what's happening. I mean, look at the world today. My son is 31, and he brought up a great point. He said to my wife and I, he goes, you know, his name is Zach. Zach said, I'm a digital native. You and mom, you're digital immigrants.
Wow.
We grew up in another time. I mean, when we wanted to do something, we had to spend time and dig and put in the effort, the energy through repetition and research. We had to dig under the rock. We just didn't ask Siri. We just couldn't Google it. And certain things in the process of making music on an instrument, you can't Google that. That takes time and repetition. And it happens through failure, and it needs to be constantly done until it becomes an unconsciously viable entity that you can produce. I mean, you want to be unconsciously competent.
Yeah.
Where you don't want to think about it. At this point, I don't want to be thinking about anything when I'm playing. I'm just paying attention. And the world we're in now is very different. It's changing. I don't know what it's going to be. It's a very different climate from when I grew up. I was always the youngster playing with elders, besides, of course, having fun with my friends. But I got better playing with people who were better than me and had the patience to deal with my immaturity, my youth. But I guess I had something going on. And most of the elders were very encouraging. And, you know, I would get gigs, and I invariably learned more when I got fired from a gig than when I got hired. And after the disappointment of the situation, I went into a point of like, let me evaluate what happened here. Why did this happen? And out of something negative, I channeled it into something positive. How could I learn from it and improve through that situation?
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people now, they want to get instant gratification and they want to be instantly praised. You have to earn this. This is something you have to earn. And here, another great acronym I heard years ago was for the word time. This I must earn.
Nice.
You have to spend, you have to be committed to it. And you have to realize that it takes time and effort and continual development. It's a constant process. I mean, the higher one gets up the mountain, the more there is to see. So it's an ongoing process. I mean, of course, I wish I had technical facility like some other people I know out there, but I don't get gigs because I take a drum solo or I can play a fast single stroke roll. That's not getting me a gig.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. So you have to try to figure out what it is you're trying to do. I believe playing music is a social process. You have to be able to get together with people. You have to know how to listen. And to me, the greatest musicians I know generally hear the best.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I had this conversation with a drummer a few months back on one of the interviews. And someone had actually said to me that they thought drummers, and again, you know, this is probably for the people who are listening that aren't drummers, probably seems like we're just praising drummers nonstop. But this guy actually said to me, and we were talking in the interview, he was saying that drummers, in his opinion, have the best ears when it comes to music. Not necessarily from a pitch point of view or anything like that, but from a knowing where things sit level-wise, knowing where things sit arrangement-wise, the harmony of certain songs and stuff. And we got into this whole discussion about it, which it's kind of reminding me a little bit of some of the stuff you've just spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, if you are a drummer and you're in the moments and you're not having to think about your performance per se, you're really just in the moment of the music, relying on the chops, if you want to use that word, that you've learnt in the practice room that you aren't now practicing on the gig, you actually have to listen to the band as a whole. You know, it's like we're one of the few instruments that really seem to have to listen to the whole band. Some instruments can get away just listening to themselves. We can't do that.
It's a social process.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that we have to get inside the music. And truth be told, the quickest way to change the sound of a band, change the drummer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people have that misconstrued idea, oh, the drummer keeps time for a band. Well, when you're playing with good people, they don't need a drummer. There's been great bands out there that didn't even have drums. Everybody in a group has a responsibility to time. Time is necessary. And you can play all the correct notes and be completely accurate with how you're dealing with the scales on chord changes. But if your time's not happening, it's not happening. On the other hand, you may be skating through the changes, not really be sure about what's going on in that regard. But if you got a great time feel, a great vibe, and it's projecting in a certain way, it can be wrong and it can still sound good.
True.
And it's so necessary because my job is to help orchestrate a composition. You know, you think about a song, you have an introduction, you play something on the intro, that's one thing. Let's say it's an AABA, you play something on the A, you play something on the second A, you'll do something different on the bridge. Hopefully you recapitulate what you did on the first A section. And then who you're playing with and what the instrument is and how they play is going to affect what I do. I mean, it's going to be different. I mean, I don't know if you ever heard it, but a great, great document for definitely drummers to hear is the recording that came out back in the 40s of Baby Dodd's Talking. It's called Talking and Drum Solos.
I have heard it. Baby Dodd's has quite the reputation, even still now down here.
I mean, what he says there, it's timeless words. You have to play for the benefit of the band. And you have every instrument is going to have a different sound. You have to accommodate that. You have to be cognizant of how everybody's got a different time feel. You know, you get 10 people playing a C major scale on a piano, they're all going to play it different. It's all going to sound different. And you have to help them get what they want. And you have to be aware that everybody plays different. Some people want you to just lay down a nice foundation and stay out of their way. Other people want a lot of interaction. They don't want you to interfere, but they wanted you to interact. And they want to get their ass kicked, but they don't want you to knock them down. So you have to find the balance of all these things working with your fellow musician.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Let's talk about practice just for a second, and then I'll start changing the format.
Sure.
To more music business. You know, I remember when I was still in my teens, some of the sort of coaches or tutors that I had, they always used to say to me, pay now, play later, that kind of thing. And I asked the one guy once to explain that to me, and he said, you know...
Say that again?
He said, pay now, play later.
Pay now, play later?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, when I asked, he said that means, you know, in these formative years, before life really kicks in, you know, before you have the responsibilities that come with life, if
being
you choose
a grown
that,
up.
Being a grown up, exactly. which I didn't realize at the time because I kind of was ignorant and I thought, yeah, that's never going to happen. But he said that, you know, take the time while you have it to really spend time with your instrument and get as good as you possibly can before the life kicks in and you don't have that luxury. Now, I've said this to a few people in my life as I've gotten older, and the general consensus is people think they're always going to have the luxury of practice time, which, you know, I'm sure it can be done, but I definitely don't have, say, 4 to 6 hours to practice a day like I used to as a kid. There's no way, you know.
Impossible.
Exactly. Especially once you've got bills to pay and a relationship and dogs and things to look after, kids and all that stuff, it's just not going to happen. So how do you personally structure, if you do, your own practice/practice time at this point in your life?
Okay. At this point in my life, let's also understand the instrument. Okay. We're playing the drums. It's a lot more forgiving physically with your body than a trumpet or certain instruments that require an embouchure and things like that. You can go a few days, you can go a week. I mean, I just came from a 2-week road trip and then a week of being sick. I didn't play at all. And I had a gig the other night. And so I hadn't really played for 3 weeks. I got to the gig, I felt fresh. I've never considered myself being a technically oriented individual. My main thing was trying to get inside the music and do what I could to help that. Now, it's going to feel different if you're playing a 6-night-a-week gig, but I found that I was able to sit down, and I basically felt okay. Now, let's remember, I've probably got several thousands, I've got thousands of hours,
yeah,
of having done this. I know what I have to do. My first responsibility is to the other musicians and the music at hand. I'm very relaxed. I'm mentally focused. And I have a balance of those opposite elements. I'm focused, but I'm relaxed. I'm paying attention, but I stay calm. I can be exciting. I don't get excited. I get intense, but I don't get tense. And these are things I've kind of been able to figure out over time. I mean, if I was somebody who was a very technically oriented player, maybe I would need to be every day do something. Now, in those 3 weeks where I didn't play the instrument, I had sticks with me. I would be watching TV or something, at least just keeping the machine somewhat greased up. You know what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah.
I mean, I've tried to stay physically as relaxed as possible when I play.
I mean, that in itself is something that a lot of drummers do have difficulties with, especially as they're getting older. You know, back problems, some guys have hip problems. I've spoken to a few guys who've had knee problems with the kick pedal foot, depending which side they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that you can keep from getting tense, that's a whole nother ballgame to work on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's because many people equate concentration with tension, and that's not the way it can be. Yeah, I want to be as intense as possible, but I can't get tense. You have to stay relaxed. You have to stay very, focused. And you want to get out, ideally, you want to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start thinking, you're getting in your way. Yeah. I want to be able to react and respond to what's happening. When I'm playing with people, I want to know what the composition is. Hopefully I can get through it as best I can. I want that internalized so I don't have to think about it. It's like, I don't want to think. I don't want to think. I just want to listen, respond, and be paying attention to what's happening in the moment. That's my job. Well, it's worked for me with all my deficiencies. Somehow it's helped me.
Listen, you're a monster. I mean, if you go this, I think your episode, I'm spitballing. It's on the top of my head. I don't have my calendar in front of me. I think you're going to be episode like 30 or 32, 31 around there. And by this point, you know, I've spoken to so many drummers. I've got to be dead honest with you. This is by far the most drum intense one I've done. I wasn't going to, like I said at the top of the conversation, I wasn't going to not use this opportunity to talk to what I consider to be a master. So I have one or two more drum-heavy questions, and then we'll change it up a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah, fine. I mean, for me, I've had so many heroes and people that were inspiring to me, and they helped to build a foundation for what I do. I learned from so many people, and I learned things I want to do, things that I don't want to do. And I'm standing on the shoulders of the people that came before me. I mean, we all have parents, you know. We have our genetic parents, we have our musical parents. I'm just working on the building. They helped to build a foundation for me.
Yeah.
And you know, the people that came before me and the people that inspired me, you know them, know me.
Yeah.
It's very simple. I'm not trying to be an innovator or anything. I'm just trying to get in there and make some music.
Well, you're doing a great job, Adam.
Well, I'm doing what I can.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Charlie Persip. I know you studied with him for a brief period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just, you know, again, this is more for me than anybody else. So listeners, I'm sorry if I'm being selfish with this one, but tell me what your experience was like studying with him. And, you know, again, I briefly mentioned it earlier, but in a world of online material, how important do you feel having in-person tuition is?
There is no substitute for being in the room next to what's happening. Like I there's no substitute for direct contact, period. You feel it, it gets into your body, and it becomes something that gets into your soul. It's not going to happen from a record or a DVD or YouTube or anything. When you're in the room and you're with that person, whether you're studying with them or you're hearing them, that makes an impression that just cannot be replicated in any other kind of medium. And what was great about Charlie was first of all, this was a master. And he was also a lot of fun, and he was encouraging, and just his ability to take care of business. I mean, Charlie could play his ass off. He could read anything. And this is a rare combination. There's not a lot of guys that can play that great and read that great.
Yeah.
And he was great. And just being in his presence and with his attitude of commitment and intent was great. And he was fun. And when you're around somebody like that, just being around some of these people, it's more than the instrument. It's the human being and the human element that touches your heart. I mean, invariably, you've had it. I mean, we've all had it in our life. We hear people play, and you hear how great they play. And then when you meet them, you get a vibe about how they make you feel. And you never forget how somebody makes you feel as a human being. You know, how one human being treats another. And that's something which is, it's not going to happen out of a book. And I feel very fortunate. I grew up 1 hour from New York City. So many of my heroes and people that I would listen to on records were accessible. I could go down to the Village Vanguard when I was 16. I could sit next to Art Blakey or Max or Roy or Elvin or Mel or whoever, you name it, and feel that energy. Have you been to the Village Vanguard before?
No, so I haven't. I've only been to New York a handful of times, and it was always on very short bursts, you know?
Right.
So, no, I haven't.
Well, the shape of the Vanguard, where the drums are, they're kind of in the right-hand corner of the club, and that's along where a whole row of seats are. So you can literally sit within 2 feet of the hi-hat.
Wow.
And to be that close and to just feel that energy and to feel, there's nothing like it, man.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's like a masterclass being that close to some of these guys, you know.
Oh, and we going down on numerous nights, and you know, and these guys, they would see me, and invariably I was probably drooling and google-eyed watching these cats. And, you know, they'd see you there 2 nights in a row. They knew you were a drummer.
Yeah.
And they were all very encouraging. And they were all very receptive to my stupid questions and things like that. And, I just have so much gratitude that I was able to have some of these direct contacts with the people that helped to create this music.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate. Like you said, there's a lot of books and all these things that are available. But at the end of the day, you're going to get better playing with people who play better than you.
Yes.
And I was always the little guy, the youngster, and getting to play with, I mean, for a young drummer, there's nothing better than playing with an experienced bass player.
Yeah.
And for a young bass player, nothing better than playing with an experienced drummer. I don't play with drummers. I play with bass players. You got to learn how to get the hook up with the, you know, the spittle a ding with the ickety boom.
That's awesome.
You got to have that. I mean, that's what helps you get better. And I was also thinking a lot, you know, this past weekend, Sonny Rollins' birthday, Wilbur Ware's birthday, Elvin Jones' birthday. And the amazing thing is there's a great record, Sonny Rollins Live at the Village Vanguard, recorded in 57, with those three gentlemen. They had consecutive birthdays, which is really kind of freaky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it makes you start to wonder if maybe that's the month you need to be born to be that great.
Well, who knows, man? You know? None of them were youngsters at that point either. But that's, I always thought that's kind of a very interesting synergy.
So let me ask you a strange question.
Sure.
I mean, again, obviously we touched base on it a little earlier, but the music industry has changed, as has the rest of the world. You know, having the ability to go to places like that as an up-and-coming young musician and just different venues, the amounts of venues that used to be around, that you could basically pop into venues and network and so on and so on and so on. Now, there are certain cities in the world, New Orleans, Austin, certain parts of New York. I've heard that Miami is pretty good. You know, there are certain sort of smaller scenes now than what there used to be. So it is still possible. But how do you go about, or how would you go about networking and trying to get gigs and stuff as a musician, not just even a drummer, just as a musician nowadays? What would your approach be?
Well, what I'm noticing with a lot of the younger generation is they're doing a lot of self-promotion through the entire digital social media domain. Everybody's posting things. Everybody's putting themselves out there. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, the community is not affording the opportunities that they used to. So consequently, this is another reason why there's so much more happening with jazz education and things in schools. When I mean, I'm 67 now. So when I was a teenager, there was maybe a handful of schools in the United States that had jazz programs. You had Berkeley, I think New England Conservatory. You had North Texas. You might have had Champaign, Urbana. Might have had Florida. There was a handful. Now, every place has got them. Because there are not the opportunities within the community that used to exist. And I just think now, if you're a young person, if you went out to a social event, 9 times out of 10, it's a DJ. It's not a live band. So consequently, I've seen people in their mid-20s that had never at a gig who had never been to a live gig before.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy. I mean, it's true. Yeah. It's true because I've had these discussions, but that's pretty crazy.
It is pretty crazy. It's another time now, man. I mean, I still think the best, you know, people always say to me, how do you get a gig? And I say, have a gig.
Yeah.
Do a good job. Actions speak louder than words. I mean, you have to get results when you play. The best way you can help to promote yourself is when you're on a gig is to play your ass off. Help everybody else sound good. If you have the ability to do that, word of mouth, things like that. For young drummers, find some, you know, have your friends to play with. Try to make yourself available and put yourself out there. If there's somebody that you like, that you've heard, let them know you love them and or you like them and you would love to play with them at some point. People remember that. I always would go up to people when I was coming up. If I heard them and I dug them, I'd say, man, I'd love to hit with you sometime. I put it out there.
Yeah.
Because people want to know that the person wants to be there. I know guys that have played great that didn't really dig having a gig. And the band leader found that out and said, I can get somebody that doesn't play as well as you but wants to be here.
Yeah.
A band leader wants to know you want to be there. You have to put yourself out there. You have to try to network. You have to try to get out on the scene. Those things aren't going to change. There's got to be a balance. Having fun with your friends, being wild and crazy, doing all the stuff you want to do, and then getting with elders that are going to help you hone in on what's going to be happening. I mean, I've always believed that limitations can open up possibilities. You may not have the width, but you may be able to get some depth in what's going on. And I get so annoyed when I hear guys say, oh, yeah, I had this gig. It was a dumb gig the other day. And I say, what's dumb about the gig? You got paid, didn't you? The only dumb thing is your attitude.
Spot on.
You had a chance to learn something? Get in there, man. You got to just lay in there all night long? Get in it, man. Get in it and appreciate it and respect it. Go home. Be glad you got some Monet and you got, you know, a smile in your pocket.
Yeah. No, you're totally on the money because, you know, if you consider the percentage of the world that actually makes a living as a musician, it's like then you find people that moan about having gigs. And I get it. Not every gig is ideal. But hey, not every job is ideal. And people go and work jobs they hate every day to pay their bills. So if you're able to do something you love, even if it wasn't necessarily the particular genre or gig you wanted to do, you should count your blessings.
Can't you learn something?
Yeah.
You know, every opportunity you have with somebody to make music is a chance to learn.
I agree.
Mean, people always say to me, oh, what was your favorite gig? I say, man, you know, every situation has brought out a different aspect of me.
Yeah.
And I've been able to learn from every situation. And you have to try. And these days, I mean, I just think of, it's a different time, man. You know, I think of people going to these schools like Berkeley or these Juilliard, and how much money they're spending. How will they recoup that investment? You think of how much these schools cost. How are you going to recoup your investment playing music? It's getting harder and harder. I think, you know, the smart people to me are now are the people that are playing for fun, not because they have to do it. I mean, it's rough out here, man.
Yeah.
I mean, and people have a romanticized idea about things. I mean, I've been a road rat nonstop since like 1978, and, you know, constantly getting on planes, you know, traveling all the time. I don't make a living in this country. I'm an American export. And, you know, my son, his whole life, he saw me going in and out that door, and he's a good bass player. He works, he's got a master's in business administration. He plays for fun. You know, it's like, what are you, crazy doing this? You know? And if people say to me, like, you know, a parent will say, well, my son is thinking about becoming a musician. I say, if he's thinking about it, he shouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's
if
true.
If you have to do it, it's almost like, this is just something that consumed my life. And I have a lot of gratitude that I was able to do what I've done. I'm more than grateful that I found a partner in this world that let me do what I do. And, you know, I'm married almost 40 years, and I refer to my wife as my better 9/8. You know, and, It's not easy. It's not easy. People say, I want to, you know, to me, the work is everything until I get to the gig. Then I get to play.
Yeah.
You know, but you think about it. Yeah. It's not easy, man.
What do you think has personally been the hardest part about being a musician for you? The road being gone that much, or you got something else?
Well, being on a lot, and as time goes on, just the realities of travel, it's getting less easy as time goes on. Travel is not getting better, connections, things like that, and just the grind of all the BS you have to contend with. I mean, in a perfect scenario, it would be like Star Trek. Beam me to the gig and beam me home.
That'd be amazing.
That would be fantastic. Just get me there, get me home. All that, that's just something. But the other thing is, over time, being out there, and I kind of consider myself a road rat, road warrior, it's like when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And it also helps you build your fortitude and your sense of consistency. Because when you get out there and you have to play, people don't care how many flights you had to take. They don't care how many trains, planes, automobiles. They don't care that, you know, the wife is dealing with the two kids at home with a blown out boiler or the car guy, you know, nobody wants to know about that stuff.
Yeah.
You have to get up there and you got to focus on what has to be done, and you got a job to do. And I have a responsibility to the other musicians. I have to take care of what's going on. And that's something, and it's not about me. I'm the last one I should be thinking about. There's another great acronym. You heard that one. Team, together when everyone achieves more. And there's no I in the word team.
Yeah.
And just all these things about developing consistency and being able to just take care of business. And I remember hearing a recording of a clinic that Philly Joe Jones did at one point. And he was talking about all different things. And he goes, at the end of the day, only one thing is going to matter. Results.
Powerful stuff.
Period. They don't care if you went to school for 40 years and got 12 doctorate degrees.
No.
They don't care. No. Nobody cares. Are you going to get it? Are you going to get it? Or get it or not?
Exactly. And it comes back down to, can you make them feel something? I mean, like, yeah. You know, if you can, you're doing something good, man, you know?
And that's a beautiful thing about making music, is that it cuts through all the BS in this world. It's truly a universal language. It transcends all the nonsense. And anywhere in the world you can go. And, you know, I mean, I remember doing a tour of the former Soviet Union right after that whole place had collapsed for the State Department. We'd be like in Kazakhstan and we did the concert. And at the end of the night, we'd say, we'd want to invite any local musicians that want to come up. You want to come and play the blues with us? Everybody knew the blues.
Yeah.
You know, we could have fun. And it cut through all the nonsense and it brought just peace and harmony together with people.
That's awesome.
You know, we're all God's children in this world. And if people could realize that and had a little bit more sense of humanity and humility, that's a beautiful thing about music.
I agree.
It's something that's a very high power. And I feel that it's brought me so much. I feel so rich in my soul. I'm not rich in my pocket. But, you know, like Art Blakey said, I never saw the Brinks truck following the hearse.
That's great as well. I can't believe I've never heard that.
Oh, Art Blakey, I mean, he had so many great phrases. You know, one of the ones I love that he said was, you don't want to play too hip because, you know, two hips make an ass.
That is awesome.
And you think of him, man. He was finishing school for all the greatest musicians. Everybody went. Once you went through Art Blakey, you were ready.
Yeah,
that was finishing school. And he was also, you know, the wisdom that this man had. These guys were like shamans. You know, there's a bunch of these people out there that are. Oh, I say it, they should have taken some of him and a bunch of the other people, you know, Papa Joe, Alvin, you know, some of these elders, Philly Joe, they should have taken some of their DNA and saved it because they don't make them like this anymore.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
And they, you know, this era, I'd say, you know, since the digital world has happened, it's changed the whole template of things in this world. And I'm glad that I kind of caught the tiger by the tail. There's people that are a little younger than me. They caught the tip of the tail. But I was able to get to play with people that were direct in the whole lineage of this music. And I just have gratitude, man. I just have so much gratitude.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Adam, I know we're going to be running close on time here, so I'm going to ask you one last question.
Anything you want, man. I'm, you know, once I get going, I'm like Rap King Cole.
Oh, Rap King Cole. Oh, that's awesome. So, again, we'll finish it off with this. This one's a bit of a twisted one, but if you could go back in time with all the experience and the expertise and knowledge you've gained over the last 50 plus years, yeah. Is there anything you think you would tell your younger self that might have made your journey slightly easier?
Oh, man. Wow. That's a good question. Might have made it easier. Maybe when I was younger, if I felt more secure about sight reading better. That might have been a good tool. I'm not sure. That's a good question. That's something to think about. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's a loaded one.
Oh, yeah, it's so loaded, I can't even begin to think of where I would start with that.
You know what'll happen? We'll hang up the phone and you'll be like, damn, I should have said that.
Well, I think you have to maintain a hunger, and you have to have a passion for something. And it's something I've always had. I love this music, and I was captivated by it at a very young age. And I just have a lot of gratitude, man. I feel so fortunate. I mean, if I hung up the phone and I checked out right now, the last things I would say is I'm grateful and I'm very thankful.
That's amazing.
And it's nice to have that feeling. I feel like I'm beginning I feel like I've begun, as funny as it may sound, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, I felt like the rug got pulled out under me, because I kind of felt like I had moved up a notch on the food chain as far as my own development and my own understanding and the wisdom that comes from experience. And I was a little annoyed that, you know, opportunities were kind of pulled out for a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
But I'm just grateful anytime I get to play and make some good music. I'm happy to be there, you know.
It's a great attitude to have.
You know, I see too many people, man. It's like they got too much attitude when they should be having some gratitude. And there's too many people out here who are, you know, talking the talk, they're not walking the walk. And I see a lot of people, and I say to myself, who do you think you are? I mean, come on, man. Let's just groove here and try to get along and do the best we can and, you know, love, peace, and happiness and humanity and just try to enjoy the time we have in this world, because you know, I'm in the third of life now, so there's less in front of me than behind me. But I still have that kind of hunger in my head, like that curiosity, like when I was a kid. And it's been so great to be around elders that still have that.
Yeah,
because it's what keeps you going. You got to keep it. It keeps on going. You know, life is a constant journey. And we just have to be grateful for the good things, man. Be grateful for the good things.
I agree, man. I agree.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, I'm humbled that you asked me to be part of this whole thing that you do, and I have to check in and listen to some of these things, which I'd love to.
Adam, I'm so, so thankful that you said yes, man. I can't thank you enough. This has been so insightful. I love the little quotes and words of wisdom. It's just amazing. I mean, what I love about doing these things is, well, there's so many good things about it, but I always feel so energized afterwards, you know, and I've got to go to a gig tonight, and like, I'll be thinking about our conversation the whole way to my gig. And it's just like, it's like a supercharge. So I owe you one, man. This has been wonderful. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you having me. And I have to check out some more of these podcasts that you've done.
Thank you so much, man.
So I can get some more inspiration myself.
Hey, that sounds good. That sounds good.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you too, man. Bye.
Ciao.
Sweet. There we have it. Adam Nussbaum, everybody. Make sure you check Adam out at adamnussbaum.net. That's NUSSBAUM.net. You can also find out more about me and the Musician's Mentor at travismark.com or musicians-mentor.com. Thank you for listening. It's Christmas soon. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. We have some excellent interviews and guests coming up, so make sure you hit that subscribe button. And I know I said it already, please leave us a rating or review. Until next time, keep pushing. Peace.